DW Africa Link.
Let's put this into perspective. You are African, born and raised, yet your passport often feels more like a barrier than a gateway. I'm originally Zimbabwean, and every time I plan to travel, not to Europe or the US, but even within Africa, I'm reminded of just how many walls still divide us. Visas, border bureaucracy, suspicion at immigration desks, all from fellow African nations. So what happened to the dream of free movement? Of a united continent where we can live, work, and explore without being treated like strangers in our own backyard? Today on the show, we unpack the hard truths behind Africa's slow march toward free movement. From the promises of the African Union's protocols to the politics, fears, and power dynamics holding it all back. For millions like me, our passports are more than travel documents. They are a measure of privilege or the lack of it. And for young Africans hoping to do business across borders, the challenges are still very real. That's what's coming up. We'll hear more voices and perspectives later in the show, so stay with us. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from and about Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Free movement of people is widely seen as a cornerstone for unlocking the full potential of the African Continental Free Trade Area, or AFCFTA. But progress on ratifying the African Union's protocol has been slow. With only a handful of countries on board, the AU is now turning to peer-to-peer, learning to build momentum and overcome political hesitation. So why the sluggish pace, and can this strategy really work? To explore this, I'm joined by Dr. Oluwafemi Olamuyiwa, a consultant on the Free Movement Protocol and Migration at GIZ to the AU, and DW's Isaac Kelechi, based in Accra, Ghana. Maybe I start with you, Doc, to just tell us the latest status of the Free Movement Protocol.
Thank you so much for having me on this platform. Of course, as you know, that the status of the FMP protocol is still stand at 32 signatures by member states and 4 ratifications. This is a great milestone for the African Union. Getting 32 at the go is actually very good to have head of states putting their signature. That is a milestone. Of course, there is room for improvement. I believe that we can do more. But as it stands, 32 is enough. But we need 15 ratifications. As it stands, we have 4. We are just checking for 11 more ratification.
Right. And why do we seem to have this sluggish attitude, Doc, towards ratifying the protocol by member countries?
Actually, if you look at the 32 signature, that shows a kind of political will by head of states of the African Union, member states, political will. But as it stands, we are aware of the various issues, which include security concerns, health concerns, include competition on jobs, and so on and so forth. But there are a lot of concerns that has really slowed down the ratification.
And ratification, Doc, just for, that's a low number. And also just for our listeners to know, what's the difference between signature and ratification?
Thank you so much. One thing about signature is a show of political will, but when it comes to ratification, it starts to go through member states' internal process, including moving from foreign affairs to parliament, from parliament to, in some countries, to Minister of Justice, to look at the loopholes, the benefits and challenges, and then it will go back to the presidency for a final signature, which is called ratification. Then once that is done, the member state, that particular member state, will come to the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa to deposit the ratified instrument.
I'm sorry, I'm going to be asking you, I mean, for us to really understand, what is this instrument now that they will have to bring to the AU once they've ratified?
Yes, is the signed stamp protocol. It's just about internal process of each member state to move from one tiers of power to another to make sure that they all agree that, oh, we are able to actually implement this particular instrument. I call instrument is still a protocol. Some call it agreement to make sure that all aspect of national interest is part of this protocol.
Right. And I was just wondering why then only four, because if it's got nothing to do with budget, to do with money, I mean, it's something that should be quite straightforward for African countries. But let me just quickly come to you, Isaac Kelechi. Also, you've been covering the continent for some time and issues related to free movement. How frustrating is it for ordinary people to move across borders?
The answer is yes, very frustrating. I'm sure all of us here on this podcast have had the chance to travel or want to travel to some African countries. There are many hindrances. The first one is visa. I mean, across Africa, there are some countries that are still, for example, if I'm a Ghanaian, if I want to travel to other African countries, I need visa, right? It's just a few countries that have some arrangements with my country so I can go there visa-free. Or let's say ECOWAS, within ECOWAS sub-region, yes, the visa-free policy operates, so you can actually travel. So if you look at, for example, the advantages of traveling to any ECOWAS African country compared to maybe another country in Southern Africa or East Africa, clearly just a visa alone is a challenge, and many people cannot get through. Apart from maybe the laborious visa processing system to maybe the visa fees, just that you cannot plan really with it, that if I'm traveling to this country, I will get there tomorrow because I just have to buy my ticket. You cannot be guaranteed with that. And that's frustrating. Now, for even the West African sub-regions where you can travel across, even at the borders, there are challenges. People have to pay some money before they are allowed to pass through. It's just so frustrating. It's not as free as we even think it is in some of the sub-regions, right? And let's talk about even for businesses. I mean, that is even more, is worse for them because they cannot plan really their businesses. Taking their goods from one place to the other is challenging. And it is because even they, the human beings themselves, cannot move freely without any challenge. And if you look at how frustrating it is, it prevents people from visiting across the African countries that we have and be able to do business, reside, or maybe even try to boost the economic activity in those countries. So it's very frustrating.
All right. Speaking of businesses, Isaac, the AFCFTA Secretariat is actually in Accra. How is this free movement challenges impacting them?
Yes, and I was just making that point in the earlier submission that many of the businesses have challenges getting their goods across or even sending people across various countries to provide the services they need to provide. And it's because not all countries are on the same page, right, when it comes to free movement of people. And if that could be tackled, it would definitely help, because after is to ensure that, again, we have goods being traded, we have goods actually moving across countries, right, people trading across. But if you have after making progress in that regard, but the human beings themselves cannot move, I mean, then you see there's no alignment in that. So, and I guess that is the point that experts like Doc have been making, that if we can make progress with the free movement protocol, it will complement what AFTA is trying to achieve, so that then, I mean, the goods cannot go and the human beings are left behind. We need to have all of them work together, yeah.
Right. So, Doc, I see you nodding there. I don't know if you want to add something also, just to find out the various reasons and concerns these member countries are raising whenever you, I mean, engage with them. Are they justified?
Yes. Before I go, I want to agree with my brother. I think there are three major Africa Union flagship projects that's connect each other. They are intertwined. The first one is the FNP, and the second one, as you alluded to, is the AFCFTA. And the third one is SATEM, that is Single Africa EM markets that are interconnected. For example, you can't move goods, like he said, without people. And then we are trying to see that the number of flights, connecting flights on the continent, is very low. And you can see many times if you are going from eastern part of the continent to western part of the continent, sometimes you have to go outside the continent. And this is why these three flagship projects that are there to limit these barriers to also enhance mobility on the continent. Of course, as you put it, I think member states have shown willingness to ratify this protocol, but we have a lot way to go, sincerely. Like this protocol is not for the government officials, it's not for diplomats. They are already facilitated. This protocol is actually for common citizen of Africa to be able to move, do business, and also enjoy tourism across the continent. And of course, you have seen over the past 6 years, there's a lot of improvement. Of course, you will allude to the fact that ECOWAS and EAC, they are the leading RECs, working so much on mobility facilitation. And you have seen also that in the past 6 years, that visa openness, Africa Visa Openness Index, has really improved in terms of Gambia, Benin, Ghana of recent as well, Mauritius, Seychelles, even Nigeria, they have actually liberalized their facilitation of UMABIN. So for me, there's no reason why member states should not ratify. So we are working with them, we are encouraging them, and we hope that before the end of this year, we'll get more ratifications.
Right. Let's talk about the peer-to-peer learning platform that you have just launched as a strategy to fasten the ratification. You touched a little bit on it. Tell us more about that, Oluwafemi.
Yes, thank you so much. Actually, this is the second edition of this. We did one last year in Rwanda where we also undertook the same process in Rwanda. We took some member states to see what Rwanda has put in place. And in the one in Accra is a little bit strategic because you see the head of the just past president of Ghana just announced in December that there will be free visa on arrival for all African. I'm happy to announce to you that there's a news of Kenya as well.
Absolutely.
Say there will be free visa for all African. And this is a step forward because we are engaging with member states. And I want to assure you that the peer-to-peer is to expose member states to see facilities, to see systems and policies put in place by other member states that enable them to facilitate movement of people, both at the airport, also at the border point. And we can see that the reaction in Accra earlier this month was so good that we have seen a lot of feedback from member states to conduct similar peer-to-peer exchange program, which we will continue as the commission.
Right. And Isaac, you were actually at this peer-to-peer learning event in Accra. I mean, you are our eyes and ears on the ground. If you can also give us your own feedback, do you think such a strategy can actually do the magic?
I think so. I think largely many countries actually have some hesitation because they really have not been exposed to the opportunities that are there if they allow or they ratify this protocol. You know, some of them, when you talk to some of the countries, they talk about we'll not be able to get money from the visas that we issue. We will not be able to get some kinds of money or perhaps even issues of security that if you open the borders, I mean, we could threaten our internal security system. But if you share examples from other countries that have allowed or ratified this and they have seen the successes, because again, I mean, if there's free visa and I can travel to Zimbabwe or travel to South Africa anytime I want, I'm going there, obviously, taking my money there, right, to spend, right? I'm visiting the tourist sites, right? The country is gaining more, okay? Right. The amount of money I could spend there because I know that I can go there anytime will be more than the amount of money you'll be looking for in visa processing, whereby you will not even approve it, right, for some people. So I think that as when countries understand what system they can put in place, one, to rake in more revenue from other Africans visiting them, and also how they can even track people who come in and go out, I think that that really will help. And for some countries, you don't have access to that. So I think that that's why this peer-to-peer learning process helps, because then countries can be exposed to what they can also learn from countries that have already ratified or have signed on to it, so that everyone can get to their right spot. I just hope that, like Doc said, they could have series of this, okay, across countries, especially countries that are yet to even sign and yet to ratify, because they can really, that can really help them to fasten the process within their countries. And just to add to that is that, again, it's important to engage the political actors in this, all this, because like Doc said in the beginning, the political world is key. It is to understand that opening your borders to fellow Africans bring you better things than you may, that you think you will lose, right? And I think with that, it will go. So that's why I think that this particular peer-to-peer learning process is very good.
Mm-hmm. Now, Doc, to come to you also on this point that Isaac just said in his last statement about political figures' engagement, do you also foresee these when you actually engage with these African leaders, that at times they actually fear the outcome if Africans can just freely get into their countries in terms of political issues?
Yeah, it's just a myth for me. It's just a myth. We have realized that Rwanda opened up for the past 6-7 years. Have you seen a lot of Nigerians there? Have you seen a lot of Ghanaians there? If you look at Seychelles, the same thing. Have you seen a lot of Africans moving to Seychelles? It's just a myth. I think there's one thing that people are raising is the fear of the unknown. The fear of the unknown. I can assure you there was a study in 2018. By Africa Union and IOM on the benefits and challenges of ratifying this protocol. I can assure you the benefits actually outweigh the challenges. And the AU has gone further, with my knowledge, to engage the security services on the continent to see their point of view. And the response was so good, and they are supportive of this idea that Africans should be able to move on their continent. So there's no fear anywhere. I think the issue of getting 32 signatures is just a good start for us, and the AU will continue to do that.
Right. Now, to just go back to this Accra meeting, Doc, to also find out just some of the resolutions that came from that meeting to help this free movement agenda move forward. Because, yes, we need 4 is a low number. I know the signatures are 32. That's good. But 4, we need to improve on that.
Yes. We have several outcomes from this Accra peer-to-peer meeting. Number one is the establishment of a platform for all the chiefs of immigration across the continent. We realize that there's no platform for them to interact. So AU is working before the end of this year to establish such a platform to enable communication and interaction. We are talking about free movement. It's all about security. Yes, sharing of information. And also we are going to establish communication between member states to be able to move forward. Another outcome is for member states. In fact, there's a lot of commitment. There's a lot of commitment by member states to go back and do their homework, This is good for the AU. This is good for regional economic communities. This is good for member states. And for us, we will follow up on these outcomes.
Right. Now, let's talk about the role that media can also play, Isaac, in helping this implemented for African countries that are slow to ratify the protocol. I mean, there's also even several reasons that they've given. But hearing from Dr. Oluwafemi here, is saying most of it is a myth, you know, in terms of politics, in terms of security and all. What role can the media then play in also maybe bringing awareness to some of these leaders or politicians to ensure that at least more countries ratify the protocol?
Yes, so I think that's what we are doing, for example, with this program, right? Just to share more light on the subject and also show good examples of countries that have already ratified. I think that sometimes talking more about it, writing more about it, providing a platform for conversations like this will help these individuals who are powerful in their countries to see the need to get this going. And I think basically that's all we can do. We also need to, in various countries, hold our governments accountable and ask them why they are not moving as fast as they should. And I think as we do more of this and talk more of this, we will have some change very soon, yeah.
Now, Doctor, from the media to the role of Africans, the citizens themselves, that they can play in their various countries to put pressure on their governments to ratify this protocol. Do you also have awareness programs?
Yes, of course. The program is heavily underfunded, and the AU is working so hard to raise funds for this kind of integrated project that can unite the whole continent. Yes, we have popularization strategy that we are going to be rolling out this year. I'm sure that we have engagement with ECOSOC, AU ECOSOC, which is charged to manage CSOs. I think from that point of view, many CSOs on the continent have actually been working with ECOSOC to ensure that on the ground, that is their job. It's for citizens. It's not for AU Commission. It's not for ECOWAS, EAC, COMESA, and the likes. It's for African citizens. I think Africans should strategically stand up to demand their rights. It's a right. Mobility is a right on the continent. So strategically, they should stand up to discuss at national level to ensure that we have people moving across the continent. And one of the things that outcomes of the meeting is the establishment of national mechanism and focal points, whereby all the line ministries, the youth groups, media, we come together to form a coalition of the willing to engage the government. And I'm sure by so doing, we get more ratification. And then we should also note that there's a lot of improvement that people are moving. There's a lot of improvement in terms of bilateral agreement between member states, tripartite agreement between member states to ensure that people actually move on the continent.
And you both gave example of Rwanda, and let's talk about that, like the structural reforms that the country implemented internally to make the protocol work on the ground. And if you have any early economic or social indicators from Rwanda or other adopters that show tangible benefits, Dr. Oluwafemi.
Thank you so much. I appreciate ever since the Rwanda has opened up their borders and airports for people to enjoy facilities in Rwanda, I can show you that Rwanda is working very fast with what we saw it last year. There's a lot of modernization in terms of who enters, who is coming to Rwanda, and there's a lot of communication with other member states. Working with airlines are very particular for Rwanda. We have seen an increment in revenue in terms of tourism, in terms of investment. There's a lot of investment that's come into Rwanda. This is what we are looking at. CFTA is all about improving economy of member states. And if you don't open up, business will not come in. So Rwanda has really benefited in opening up their borders, in opening up their country to, of course, in a more secured way, that member states can actually learn more from Rwanda. I'm so happy that while the peer-to-peer was going on in Accra, Rwanda Director General of Immigration was meeting the Director General of Immigration of Ghana. This is what AU want to achieve, to ensure that member states speak to each other. And I'm sure if other member states can open up, follow Rwanda, and then you will see a lot of improvement in terms of economic development.
Looking ahead, what gives you the most hope that the free movement protocol can gain the traction it needs across the continent? And what's the one action you believe could make the biggest difference right now?
I think I'm very positive that in the long run, we will get things done in a better way, and Africa will be able to move across their own continent that God has given to us. We just need to continue to work with member states, with stakeholders. Media, very important. I think at this point, we cannot do anything without the media. We need media to preach this gospel, to tell this story that Africans must move across their own continent in a more free, fair, and dignified manner.
Dr. Oluwafemi Olamuyiwa and Isaac Kelechi, thank you both for joining us. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but you are part of this community. Your voice matters and your experiences can shape the conversations we have here. So what's been your experience with migration and free movement across Africa? Would love to hear from you. And don't forget, you can find all of our Africa Link episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. And until the next time, it's goodbye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.